In a literary landscape filled with supernatural tales, Ransom Riggs' Library of Souls stands apart as a rare gem that continues to captivate millions worldwide. The third installment in his Miss Peregrine series has sold over 10 million copies globally and spent more than 100 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. Tim Burton's film adaptation of the first book further cemented the series in pop culture, with celebrities like Emma Watson and Stephen King publicly praising its unique blend of vintage photography and supernatural storytelling. What makes this series so compelling is how it transforms the feeling of being different into something magical rather than isolating. Through Jacob Portman's journey, we discover that our greatest weaknesses might actually be our most extraordinary strengths, a message that resonates deeply in our increasingly standardized world. Jacob Portman stands mere inches from a Hologast, a nightmare creature with murderous intent in a ruined London underground station. Somehow, he's commanded this monster to stop, speaking in a language he didn't know he possessed. With Emma dazed beside him and Addison the talking dog at his feet, they're trapped between the hollow and a sea of glass, their friends already captured by whites and taken away on a train with Miss Peregrine. As they edge past the hollow by pressing against the wall, Jacob fights the urge to abandon everything and find his parents in London, having just revealed his peculiarity to his father minutes ago. Their desperate situation forces difficult choices. Should they follow their captured friends through dark tunnels or face whatever awaits above? The folding man, Sergei, calls to them from the tracks, wounded but alive, having witnessed Jacob's ability to command the hollow. When whites appear at the escalator, they're trapped until an unexpected train arrives. In desperation, Jacob recalls the command word and directs the hollow to attack the whites instead, allowing their escape. What's particularly fascinating about Jacob's journey is how it mirrors our own coming-of-age experiences. We all face moments when we must choose between safety and risk, between the familiar world of our parents and the unknown territories that call to our true selves. Jacob's peculiar ability, communicating with monsters, becomes a powerful metaphor for embracing the parts of ourselves that society might consider strange or frightening. As they navigate London, they discover a comic convention providing perfect camouflage for peculiars. Following a white's trail and their friend's scent, they walk through London's transformed streets until reaching a jetty where tourists board sightseeing boats. The physical journey through London parallels Jacob's internal journey, moving between worlds, neither fully belonging to the normal realm nor completely integrated into the peculiar one. Following Addison's nose, they discover a deserted lower dock where peculiars have recently passed. Here, they encounter Sharon, a massive hooded boatman who offers transportation to Devil's Acre, described as the most depraved and dangerous slum in the whole long history of London. Despite warnings, they purchase passage, hoping to rescue their captured friends. The journey into Devil's Acre reveals a hellscape of rotting buildings, filthy water, and desperate inhabitants. Sharon provides a macabre tour of this Victorian slum, describing it as the capital of cholera, where people drink from the same canal used as a sewer. They pass disturbing landmarks, a prison for orphans, an asylum that's perpetually empty, and Smoking Street, which has been burning for 87 years. Haven't we all encountered our own versions of Devil's Acre? Those dark places in society we prefer not to see, where those who don't fit the acceptable narrative are pushed aside and forgotten. The physical manifestation of Devil's Acre serves as a stark reminder that even magical societies create underclasses and margins. When attacked by men in a boat, Jacob instinctively commands his hollow to defend him. This growing connection with the hollow makes Jacob realize they're potentially unstoppable, though the power comes with moral complications. Sharon eventually drops them at a narrow alleyway entrance to Devil's Acre, warning them to avoid Cannibal's Alley and never touch ambrosia. The winding maze of narrow passages feels like being led to slaughter. Nothing living exists here except vermin and bloodshot-eyed inhabitants lurking in doorways. They witnessed disturbing sights, slumped figures, shivering sleepers on straw mats, and ragged children, before reaching Louche Lane, a surprisingly orderly street with shops and well-dressed people. In Louche Lane, they discover Peculiar selling their abilities as services, a practice considered immoral by Emma and Addison. Following a woman named Lorraine to her establishment, they find imprisoned Peculiars, some children, whom she treats as commodities. Under threat, Lorraine reveals that whites regularly take Peculiars, returning them with blanked memories and nightmares, confirming that trucks of kidnapped Peculiars came through earlier that day. The most disturbing revelation comes when they learn about ambrosia, a black liquid that temporarily enhances Peculiar abilities but creates dependency. Sharon explains the horrifying truth. Ambrosia contains little bits of our stolen souls from kidnapped Peculiars, crushed and fed back to Peculiars by the whites, turning them into unwitting cannibals addicted to their own souls. This concept strikes at something profoundly unsettling about human nature. How often do we consume others' essence, their labor, creativity, or spirit, to enhance our own power? The ambrosia trade represents the ultimate corruption, turning the very thing that makes Peculiar special into a commodity that enslaves them. When they find a hollow gas chained in a cage for blood sport, Jacob formulates a plan to free it. He enters the cage and easily re-establishes control over the hollow with simple commands in hollow speak. After staging an elaborate fight and convincing the crowd of his victory, they attempt to escape with the hollow. When confronted by the ambrosia dealer, Jacob commands the hollow to attack, creating enough chaos for them to flee with both the hollow and two imprisoned Grim Cubs. The relationship Jacob develops with the Hollow challenges our understanding of monsters. What if the things we fear most are not inherently evil, but simply misunderstood or misused? Jacob's growing compassion for the Hollow, a creature that would normally eat him, suggests that empathy can extend beyond comfortable boundaries, perhaps even to those we consider enemies. At Bentham's magnificent house, they meet Mother Dust, a healer mostly hidden beneath layers of fabric, who creates healing powder by rubbing her shortened right arm. This selfless act, wearing away parts of herself to heal others, stands in stark contrast to the soul-stealing practices of the whites. Bentham reveals his house is actually a machine of his own invention called the Panlupticon, designed to unite peculiardom by creating direct connections between loops across the world. He explains that his brother Call had a hidden agenda involving Abaton, a special loop where peculiar souls are stored after death, like a library where souls could be borrowed and returned. The concept of the Library of Souls touches on our deepest questions about mortality and legacy. What remains of us after death? Is there some essence that continues, that might be preserved or even borrowed? The ancient Peculiar's belief that souls should be returned like library books speaks to a sustainable, circular understanding of life force, one that modern Peculiars, like modern humans, have forgotten. In a shocking confession, Bentham reveals he took a piece of Jacob's grandfather's second soul for experiments, hoping to give other Peculiars the ability to see hollows. The procedure weakened his grandfather and diluted his talent, explaining why he left Peculiardom and why a hollow eventually killed him. Even worse, Bentham's technology became the precursor to ambrosia. When testing his newly repaired machine, Bentham opens doors to other times and places. Rarotonga in 1752, British Columbia in 1929, and the ancient ruins of Palmyra. His Panlupticon gives them 87 potential escape routes, crucial for their planned rescue mission. Their planning is interrupted by a messenger parrot claiming to be from Miss Peregrine, which turns out to be a bomb. They realize Call knows where they are, has captured Addison, and wants Jacob alive, likely because he believes Jacob can access the Library of Souls. Inside the White's Fortress, a labyrinthine structure of cold stone and flickering fluorescent lights, Call's voice echoes through an antiquated speaker system. He explains with clinical detachment how he's performed a partial soul extraction on Miss Glassbill, leaving her in a near-vegetative state. The scene is horrific. The Imbrenés are bound to wooden chairs, surrounded by Victorian-era anatomical models and disturbing surgical implements. Blood-stained tools lie scattered across metal tables, while Miss Peregrine's conspicuous absence fills Jacob with dread. Through crackling speakers, Call presents his proposition with the smooth confidence of a seasoned negotiator. He wants an eyedropper's worth of Jacob's soul, a seemingly modest request that masks its true significance. Call reveals he's finally located Abaton, the mythical library of peculiar souls. And while the Imbrenés helped him unlock its entrance, Jacob's unique holo-controlling abilities are essential to accessing its power. His ambitions are grandiose, to establish himself as the supreme ruler of peculiardom and eventually subjugate the normal world beneath his reign. Jacob's refusal triggers Call's contingency plan, the release of a particularly vicious holo into the Imbrenés chamber. The creature moves with predatory grace, its tentacles writhing in the dim light. While Jacob attempts to assert control over the beast, Emma races to free Miss Wren, her fingers working frantically at the bonds. The Hollow's attack is swift and brutal, forcing Jacob to consider drinking the ambrosia hidden in his pocket, a dangerous shortcut to greater power. Miss Peregrine's voice cuts through his uncertainty, reminding him that true strength comes from within, not external sources. Taking Miss Peregrine's words to heart, Jacob grabs a wooden stake and charges the hollow with desperate courage. The stake proves ineffective against the creature's otherworldly flesh, barely slowing its advance. As Jacob finds himself trapped in the hollow's expanding maw, its breath carrying the stench of centuries-old decay, he remembers Mother Dust's finger in his pocket. With split-second thinking, he crushes the digit and forces it down the hollow's throat. They plummet together into the creature's underground nest, where the sedative properties of the dust gradually immobilize both of them. This confrontation embodies the culmination of Jacob's hero's journey, presenting him with a crucial choice between quick fixes and authentic growth. The temptation of ambrosia represents the allure of external solutions, while Miss Peregrine's guidance emphasizes the importance of self-trust and inner resources. This mirrors universal human struggles. Do we seek artificial enhancements when faced with overwhelming challenges? Or do we trust in our inherent capabilities to overcome obstacles? Jacob regains consciousness in a scene of eerie stillness, surrounded by the prone forms of unconscious hologast. In this moment, he discovers an extraordinary evolution of his peculiar ability. He can now control hollows without uttering a single command, experiencing a strange dual consciousness that allows him to simultaneously exist in both his own body and within the hollow's perception. This newfound power manifests as an intricate mental connection, letting him puppet multiple hollows with the precision of a master puppeteer, each one an extension of his will. With methodical focus, Jacob assumes control of 11 hologasts, each one responding to his mental commands with perfect synchronization. He guides this formidable army up into the room above, making a dramatic entrance that leaves his friends speechless with amazement. When Call's mocking voice echoes through the facility's PA system, Jacob demonstrates his enhanced control by directing the hollows to systematically destroy every speaker, silencing the tyrant's taunts. Miss Peregrine, maintaining her principles even in this moment of advantage, firmly declares that Call must face formal Imbrenic justice rather than summary execution, a reminder that they must not descend to their enemy's level of brutality. The tension escalates as Whites begin their assault on the door, the sound of their battering reverberating through the room. During this brief respite, Horace approaches Jacob with an unexpected gift, a carefully hand-knitted scarf created during his captivity, a touching reminder of their friendship amid chaos. When the Whites finally breach their defenses, Jacob orchestrates a brilliant tactical response, sending his invisible hollow army charging forward to clear the corridor, their unseen bodies creating havoc among their enemies. The group makes a pivotal decision that transforms their escape plan into something more ambitious. They choose to stand and fight, to end Call's reign of terror once and for all. Emma's declaration, accompanied by her raised hand wreathed in flames, becomes their battle cry. Let's burn this place to the ground. The ensuing battle showcases the Peculiar's abilities in their full glory. Emma wields her pyrokinesis with devastating effect, creating walls of flame to corral their enemies. Bronwyn demonstrates her incredible strength, using dislodged bricks as projectiles with deadly accuracy. Hugh coordinates his bee swarm with tactical precision, while the Yimbrans transform into their bird forms, diving and attacking with razor-sharp talons. Just as exhaustion begins to set in and their advance starts to falter, Bentham makes a timely appearance astride his formidable Grimbear PT, shifting the battle's momentum decisively in their favor. His arrival transforms their desperate stand into a coordinated assault, with the Grimbear's raw power complementing their peculiar abilities perfectly. After ascending countless stairs to reach the tower's summit, the group enters a dimly lit corridor carved from ancient stone, its walls bearing mysterious, peculiar symbols that seem to pulse with faint energy. The passage opens into a vast chamber hewn directly from primitive rock, but it's what lies beyond that steals their breath. Through massive archways, an alien cityscape stretches to the horizon. Towering spires and maces of deep crimson stone, their faces punctured by thousands of crude doors and windows in a dizzying honeycomb pattern. "Welcome to Abaddon," Call announces with theatrical flourish, his voice echoing across the ancient expanse. "The sacred city that has guarded the Library of Souls since time immemorial." The ritual begins when Call directs Jacob to pour an iridescent blue liquid, its surface shifting and swirling with otherworldly patterns, into an intricately carved channel in the stone floor. The substance begins a violent reaction, bubbling and hissing as it flows, releasing tendrils of luminescent vapor that coil through the air. When it finally reaches the central pool, the chamber erupts with blinding white light. From the roiling surface, a massive form takes shape, a titan of pure energy, its crystalline body towering 30 feet high, razor-sharp claws raised in a posture of terrifying power. The moment of betrayal comes swift and shocking. Rather than honor his agreement to share power with his brother Bentham, Call reveals his true nature. In one fluid motion, he draws a pistol and fires directly at Jacob's chest. Before anyone can react, Call leaps into the spirit pool, merging with the giant soul in a transformation that turns him into something barely recognizable as human. A creature of raw power, with skin like translucent crystal and eyes blazing with otherworldly energy. His newfound telekinetic abilities send Peculiars flying across the chamber like leaves in a storm. Emma's flames, Millard's invisibility, and Bronwyn's strength prove useless against him until Hugh's bees, those tiny, determined warriors, swarm his crystalline eyes, providing a crucial moment of distraction. In the chaos, Jacob discovers he's alive thanks to Horace's prophetic gift. The peculiar wool scarf he'd been wearing caught the bullet. Meanwhile, Bentham seizes his opportunity. First, consuming the soul essence of Jacob's grandfather from a hidden vial, then toppling an enormous amphora that releases a being of equal might to Call's stolen power to Call's clash. The brothers, now both transformed into crystalline giants, clash in earth-shattering combat. Their battle tears through the ancient chamber, sending centuries-old soul jars crashing to the ground. Each one releasing its captured essence in bursts of ethereal light and energy. The scene serves as a powerful metaphor for the corruption of power. These brothers, who spent lifetimes attempting to harness and control peculiar abilities, find themselves destroyed by the very force they sought to master. Their final battle embodies the age-old conflict between those who crave power for dominion over others and those who understand that true strength lies in knowing when not to use it, a lesson written in the destruction of Abaddon itself. After the loop collapses with Kaul inside, the Ymbrines restore order. They free dozens of peculiars from underground cells and laboratories, destroying the White's machines of torture. Despite exhaustion, they feel energized by their survival, with spontaneous celebrations breaking out. Emma and Jacob stay attached but barely speak, both afraid to discuss what happens next. Jacob feels torn between two worlds, two versions of himself and two families, needing all but knowing he'll eventually have to choose. At Bentham's house, Miss Peregrine reflects on her relationship with her brothers, wondering if her actions influence their dark paths. When Emma directly asks if Jacob will stay, he responds, "I have to see my parents." They agree to be just friends if he ever returns, and Miss Peregrine offers to selectively erase his parents' troublesome memories. Back home, Jacob faces restricted freedom, constant supervision, and psychiatric evaluation. Emma's letters become his lifeline until his parents intercept them and arrange to send him to a psychiatric clinic. In the dramatic conclusion, as his family drives him to the facility, the car suddenly stops. Standing in the driveway are all his peculiar friends, with Miss Peregrine at the front. As his parents gape in shock, the peculiars demonstrate their abilities. Jacob reunites with Emma, who explains they received his email when he stopped writing letters. Most importantly, they discovered that everyone who was in Abaddon when the loop collapsed had their ages reset. They now age normally like Jacob, one day at a time. As they walk to the house, Jacob and Emma discuss taking things slow now that they have time. Those might be the three most beautiful words in the English language. We have time. The Journey Through Library of Souls offers profound insights about identity, belonging, and the nature of power. Jacob's evolution from an ordinary teenager to the Master of Hollows represents the ultimate coming-of-age story, discovering that what makes you different also makes you powerful. His ability to see and control Hollows, initially perceived as a curse, becomes the key to saving both the peculiar and normal worlds. This transformation echoes the universal experience of learning to embrace rather than hide one's unique qualities. The peculiar world Riggs creates serves as a mirror to our own society, reflecting our treatment of those who are different, our relationship with power, and our fear of the unknown. Through the intricate social hierarchy of peculiardom, from the Embrene Council to the marginalized peculiars living in Devil's Acre, Riggs explores how societies categorize and value different abilities. The White's exploitation of peculiar souls through ambrosia parallels how dominant cultures often appropriate and commodify the unique gifts of marginalized communities. This dark trade in peculiar essence becomes a powerful metaphor for cultural exploitation and the commodification of identity. The novel's exploration of time loops adds another layer of complexity to its themes. These temporal sanctuaries, while offering protection, also represent a kind of prison, a metaphor for how fear of difference can lead to self-imposed isolation. The peculiars' escape from their frozen loops into normal aging represents liberation from stasis, allowing them to grow and change rather than remaining eternally the same. This transition challenges the apparent safety of unchanging perfection in favor of authentic, if sometimes painful, growth. Through characters like Miss Peregrine and her wards, we see how the courage to embrace change, even at the risk of loss, leads to fuller, richer lives. The relationship between Jacob and the Hollows particularly illuminates the book's central message about understanding those who are different. Initially presented as mindless monsters, the Hollows are revealed to be complex beings capable of both destruction and loyalty. Jacob's growing ability to communicate with them suggests that what we fear most might simply be what we fail to understand. This dynamic plays out in parallel with his growing acceptance of his own peculiarity and his place in this extraordinary world. In the end, Library of Souls reminds us that our greatest strength lies not in stealing or hoarding power, but in sharing it. Not in isolating ourselves in protective loops, but in venturing out into the uncertain world. And not in fearing our differences, but in celebrating them. The novel suggests that true power comes from understanding and accepting both ourselves and others, even or especially when that understanding challenges our preconceptions. As Jacob discovers, sometimes the monsters we fear most are the very beings we're uniquely equipped to understand, if only we have the courage to speak their language and open ourselves to unexpected connections.